We're back with the Killer Bees, broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at the Decoy in Spring Branch. Here's Joel Blank and Brian McDonald.
Me and BMAC today, as Jeremy is more than halfway to his first victory in the Big 12 tournament with his Cougs. Cougs 46, TCU 27, 9:51 to go in the second half. If you missed any of it, you didn't miss much other than the Cougs blitzing TCU right from the jump, literally. Brian mentioned it, TCU didn't score until almost the 10-minute mark of the first half, and U of H has been in command the entire game. A good, solid first win in the Big 12 tournament for the Cougs.
Yeah, it was one of those, it was almost like a Mike Tyson fight back in the day. If you got up at the beginning to go to the bathroom or get a drink, by the time you sat down, it was over.
Yeah, this is a team that, as I mentioned multiple times throughout the season, defense travels.
Yeah.
Their defense set the tone early on. They're active, they're athletic, they're all over. And if you're not ready for it, no matter what the crowd is and whose favor they're on, that can be the difference maker in any ball game. And that's why they have such a good chance to go deep into the tournament, both this one and the NCAA tournament, because of the fact that their defense is on a different level.
Now, I don't know if you'll share this concern, and I know Jeremy would point to some of their offensive metrics, and certainly the Cougars' offense has been better than maybe the raw points per game number would suggest. But I don't know if you share this concern, and maybe this is something, a separate conversation when you talk about what happened with Virginia being the number one seed that I believe the first number one seed to lose
when
to
they
a 16.
Lost to Baltimore County.
Right. I just worry with teams that intentionally keep scores low, slow pace of play, play a game where they want to win in the 50s and 60s. It just feels like as the competition level goes up, you invite closer games, and every time there's a closer game, there's a more of a chance that you know it could go against you. So I have a little bit of a worry, and maybe pace of play and keeping these games closer than if they played more up tempo. I don't know if you share that thought, but just something in my head when you see these defensive teams that try to limit possessions, and that could rear its ugly head and bite you in the butt.
I'll be honest with you, throughout the year, my biggest concern for the Cougs was, and this was before Cryer kind of stepped up, was the fact that I didn't think that they had a go-to wing that could take some of the load off of Shed and be a kind of guy you could rely on to get a bucket when you needed one. Because to be honest, he got a lot of looks early in the season through the midway point, Cryer did, and he wasn't making the shots. And now all of a sudden you've seen a different LJ Cryer where something happened to where he really feels 100% comfortable. And now you've got both your backcourt guys, our go-to guys. The injuries concern me a little bit, but the fact that you have a team that has three bigs that clean the glass and rotate defensively, rebound, block shots. The defense is one thing, but this is the ultimate team this year. You're not looking at like Danny and the juniors with the Kansas teams or Carmelo's Syracuse teams where you knew the one dude that was the locomotive and you had to stop that train.
Certainly.
I think you have so many different guys that can beat you offensively. Sharp's another guy that stepped up for the Cougs. But that the fact that they play team ball on both ends of the floor, that's why I'm not worried about it being a little bit lesser scoring game. Because other guys can pick up the scoring slack. It's a lot of balance. And their defensive rotations are fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's get into like what we talked about, T's going into the break, some of the Astros' performances over the spring. Maybe kind of get your confidence level. Let's check the confidence level that we have in some of the Astros that have a question mark, whether it be performance or health or age or whatever it happens to be. Starting with some news from Joe Espada on Justin Verlander. JV was scheduled to throw a bullpen today, and what Joe Espada said is if all goes well, and I haven't heard that it hasn't yet, hopefully I haven't missed an update, that his next time out for JV will be against live batters. Where does that put your confidence right now in Justin Verlander?
Well, that means that it's not anything serious, which is what they were telling us. That means that it's going to be a situation where it's going to be very short-lived stint on the IL before he gets back into the rotation, and that's encouraging because the one thing you didn't want with the other two guys in the rotation probably being out to the midway point, if not further along, when you talk about Garcia and you talk about McCullers, and then, you know, J.P. France has been throwing, but you don't know when he's going to come back either. you didn't want to have a long stint without JV. So the fact that it looks like it'll be sooner rather than later is just encouraging for me, because it's not a big-time serious injury. It's more of, like he said, just kind of making sure he's on schedule.
Yeah, and that's always a concern. Maybe this is unfair, but that's always a concern with the Astros, because you don't always know if they're telling you
they're
the truth.
They're not normally
up front
with their discomfort.
Yeah, I mean, we can't forget Dusty Baker one time didn't know what hand was hurt for Yordan Alvarez. And Yordan,
well, and like I said, their PR department's favorite word is discomfort.
Exactly.
And you have no idea what that means.
So there was always a little skepticism, I think, for when the Astros report injuries. But I think you're right. With what we're hearing about Justin Verlander, then maybe it was a minor issue that's going to be fine and all forgotten about once we get to mid-April. So you mentioned J.P. France. He is apparently going to start a minor league, or he started a minor league game the other day. It will start a Grapefruit League game on Saturday in a spot of saying 3 innings, 50 pitches for J.P. France. So confidence level in J.P. France, it looks like. You know, this start on Saturday, maybe one more. He could be to a point by the time he gets to that fifth spot in the rotation where he could give you 5 innings.
I'm not going to count that, B-Mac. I'm going to say that just because I think they always border on being conservative and making sure guys are right. I think he'll probably start the season out for the first couple weeks. I think he'll be fine, so you don't have to rush him back till you can get more pitches under his belt and he can be ready to, you know, kind of give you everything right from the get-go once he starts playing. But again, you've dodged another bullet where you're not looking at a major issue.
Not long term.
That looks like you might be, you know, losing a guy for significant time, which is great because you're waiting on the other two guys. So, look, everything encouraging with the starters. I wasn't worried about the starters as much as others. And I feel like when they are right and when they are healthy, the surplus of starting pitching that they have is going to help their bullpen.
Yeah, so let's talk about one more starter, and then we'll get into that bullpen. Christian Javier, who I know I've had some hot takes on during spring training, but he's looked great. So yesterday he allows four innings, gives up two hits, no walks, no runs, strikes out four. And so far over the spring, 10 innings pitched, has a 180 ERA and 13 Ks, which
and the
leads
velo's
the team.
Up.
And the velo is up by at least a mile per hour compared to last year. I mean, I think all signs pointed way up for Christian Javier.
And when you think about it, the conversation that the three of us have had in terms of the big expectations we have and who's going to have bigger expectations, Fromber or Javier. Right now, Javier looks like he's under control because he's not worried about who's calling pitches. He's not worried about what's between his ears. It was all about what was attached, you know, the free-hanging extremity that's attached to his upper body.
Right.
And the fact that velo was down, control was an issue, pitch count was up, and you had a lot of concerns. I think if there's one guy that has put a lot to bed in training camp, it has been him. Because everything you've seen from him and his ability to get back to the old Javier gives you the encouragement that if JB's not out long, and that if Fromber doesn't call his own pitches, there's no reason to believe that you have one of the best first three starters in baseball.
Yeah, I couldn't be more confident right now in Christian Javier. I think what Christian Javier has shown so far during the spring is the 2022 Christian Javier. I think 2023 is a product of the WBC. It's a product of maybe putting on a little bit of weight, which he then took off before reporting to camp this year. So I think we get 2022 Christian Javier again. So, all right, bullpen. I think we're all in agreement. I mean, obviously, Hader, Ryan Pressly, Brian Abreu. There's no concern there.
No, we know
we don't care about the spring.
We know
numbers.
Abreu's going to miss the first two games of the Yankee series. So what? He's going to be fine. I've got no concerns with him. I don't care what he's done this spring. You know, the bigger thing is that, you know, he's a guy that we saw in key high leverage situations just be overwhelming to a lot of hitters in this league.
Yeah.
So I really believe that
he might have the best pitch on the roster.
I'll tell you what,
Coffee
Mac, if
fastball.
I'm worried about anything right now, it's just the fact that Ryan Pressly not in the closer role, just to see how he handles
it. Sure. Sure, yeah, and I don't want to get caught up on his spring ERA, obviously a little bit high, but I'm not going to worry about a spring ERA with a veteran like Ryan Pressly. One that I might be worried about, and it is only two innings pitched so far with this guy, so it's hard to go too far either way with our reactions. But yesterday, not a good day for Rafael Montero. Gets zero outs, allows two hits. Four earned runs, three walks as well. Just an absolute disaster. Again, it's two innings, so his ERA is sky high because it's two innings. But Rafael Montero walking three, giving up two hits in one inning, no outs, and gives up four earned runs. Where is your concern level right now, Rafael Montero?
Well, my concern level has always been very high with Montero once he signed.
Because the second half was good last year.
Well, according to Jeremy.
Well, it was.
And the
it
numbers,
was. The
I get
ERA
it.
Was there.
But I've never been a fan of this move of bringing him back with the amount of money and the years they gave him after having literally his best year of his entire career.
His really only good year.
The only good year. I keep telling people to use the Bagwell commentary. Check the back of his baseball card. He was a starter. He was a closer. He was a reliever. He was not very good until the last year of his deal with the Astros. And suddenly Jim Crane, without a general manager, gave him too many years and too much money. And since then, he's been basically the average Rafael Montero that he's been since he's been a major leaguer. He's a massive concern of mine because we keep saying, hey, look, you know who the seventh, eighth, and ninth guys are going to be, inning guys. Sixth inning is a big deal. They want it to be Montero. I don't if he's going to be this Montero or the Montero that we saw for the majority of his career. I don't feel confident in that guy getting outs when you need them. He could be a mop-up guy the way Dusty used him for when he was getting that ERA lower and when he was getting more success. I don't have a lot of confidence in him anyway. This doesn't give me any more. It doesn't help me with the way he's pitched.
And I think that might be the answer. Is what when he started to turn around was when he was moved into lower leverage situations. And over that second half of the year where he started to pitch better in those lower leverage situations, his ERA was, you know, mid-threes to low-threes. So I think you could – if Montero's your fifth-inning guy for when a reliever or when a starter isn't able to go, you know, the five innings or more, and he's pitching to a mid-three ERA, I could handle that, but certainly it doesn't give you confidence in him being a high-leverage guy. So two other middle relief guys, one you're a huge fan of, Parker Mashinsky. I'm going to go ahead and use his real first name.
I call him Hunter Mashinsky. I might have to change it because, again, I felt like him worse than I felt about Rafael Montero, and now he is at least trying to change my opinion of him in spring training. Six innings pitched. No earned runs, nine strikeouts.
Yeah.
Don't know where it came from, but we needed to see it if he was still going to be on this roster. He's a guy that I have some encouragement about.
So the other name I wanted to bring up, you're right, Parker Mashinsky has been absolutely amazing this spring so far. Also, Seth Martinez, he's had five appearances, 4 2/3 inning, no runs, 6 Ks. So between Parker Mashinsky, Seth Martinez, confidence level, and those guys, are you I guess confident in one of those guys taking over and being a critical middle relief guy before you get to Abreu, Presley, Hader?
Seth Martinez, I am.
Okay.
Because aside from a hiccup against Aaron Judge, I think it was last year.
Yeah.
For the most part, whether Dusty Houston had been a mop up or multiple innings and extra innings or whenever he seemed to put him in, whether you believed that his stuff was not, a lot of people said he didn't have overpowering stuff. He didn't have a good enough fastball to get guys out. Fact is he got the job done. And I believe in him because he's been consistently getting guys outs for the last couple of years. Mashinsky's a guy I still don't have a ton of confidence when we break camp. Simply because he's got to prove to me on the major league level against the full major league lineup. He's got to get guys out. But I was also counting on seeing the Suso we saw last year, a guy that you wish was available for the postseason because he was getting guys out. Now he's not. You know, you look at Coleman, another guy that you were relying on to be a veteran that could possibly be in the middle. I'm out on Coleman. I have serious doubts about Souza. I don't ever want to see Belak in a relief role.
Sure.
I think that narrows it down to me that I'm either looking at guys like Seth Martinez or Mashinsky, or a guy that I didn't expect to like in Blanco, because Blanco's been really effective in spring.
Yeah, that'll be interesting, because Blanco could be a guy, depending on how Verlander, long Verlander and France take to get back, that you could have to end up relying on him as your fifth starter. But I think once your staff is fully healthy, Blanco as your long, you know, your long reliever, your guy who comes in if the starter gets blown up, makes a lot of sense. I'd be confident in having Blanco in that role. Can I quickly ask you about one more of your favorites? It's not a relief pitcher, but we might have to talk about Jake Meyers here. He's hitting well this spring.
Yeah.
So Jake Meyers, if you haven't seen the numbers, not only did he hit a bomb, he hit an opposite field home run, and he's attributing that to apparently he moved the position of his hands.
He put them together the way guys that hold a bat should hold a bat.
Yeah, maybe it took him way too long to get to this point, but apparently he's crediting the success with moving the position of his hands and his batting stance. But he hits the opposite field home run yesterday, and right now in the spring he's hitting .350. With an 1150 OPS, Joel.
Okay, so then, yes, you're right.
I have taken
notice of what I was saying that I'm going to keep my eye on all spring.
It's 10 spring games, about 1150 OPS.
Let me throw it back at you, B-Mac, and say, okay, for all that he's done so far, How's that going to translate to when we break camp?
I don't know. I'm looking for the ray of sunshine, the silver lining, the reason to have hope and confidence. But look, Jake Meyers. I guess it was. It's been a long time ago now. 2021. We were still dealing with COVID during 2021. But Jake Meyers did show some offensive potential in that rookie year. Obviously, he had a lot of injuries and a lot of things that derailed his career since then. I obviously don't expect him to hit 350 or have an 1150 OPS, but I do have a little ray of hope that he'd be maybe a 260 hitter with a decent OPS.
See,
and if he does that, I'm fine with him in the center.
That I've always clamored for was I just need to get the Jake Meyers before the injuries.
Right, exactly. Because, 2021, Jake.
Right. If I get 2021 Jake, he can play center field on the big league level.
Absolutely.
Because his numbers, because of his above-average defense, because he doesn't look like a deer in the headlights at the plate, and he doesn't look scared of his own shadow in the outfield.
Right.
If we get that kind of Jake Meyers, it would be a win. If you get the kind of Jake Meyers, or at least the majority of the Jake Meyers you're seeing this spring, it would be a massive upgrade. And that would be huge, because then Chaz can take time off of Yordan being in the outfield and play left. Yordan can go back and forth. You have more depth at first base with the ability to move guys, get some DH at-bats too. And your entire outfield defensively is better because Chaz covers ground, as does a guy like Jake Meyers. Defensively, it really helps. But offensively would be a huge a bonus that I didn't expect.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're all confident, or at least fairly confident. We'll see what happens with Jose Abreu's bulky knee. But I think we're all fairly confident that this Astros lineup is pretty deep 1-7. But suddenly, Jake Meyers, as your number 8 hitter, is back to 2021 Jake Meyers, or, I mean, just anywhere remotely close to what he's done in spring, then this offense goes from, I mean, I think what we had already considered top three, certainly top five, to, I mean, having a chance to be the best offense in baseball. If Jake Meyers is 2021 Jake Meyers.
Yeah, you look at Texas, they got young guys that are going to be seen for Dodgers will be up full there. Season. Yeah, on both sides, you've got the powerhouses that you expect. Texas was the best offense in baseball a year ago, like you mentioned, when you add a guy like Ohtani offensively to Freeman and Mookie and the guys that they have, there's no reason to think that they can't be as good or better. But, you know, when you look at everything that has to fall into place for other teams, if you take Maldi out and you get Yiner instead, and Yiner's on the trajectory he was a year ago, and then Jake hits, why couldn't the Astros be right there?
Yeah. You're basically, and we haven't even talked about Jeremy Pena, who's also hitting well this spring. You're in a position where there's no easy outs in the entire 1-9.
Right. And as opposed to a big hole at the bottom of the lineup.
Oh, yeah. You essentially had, you were reverting back to 2004 Astros baseball where you had Osmus Everett pitcher spot, and you're giving away 3 innings a game.
7-8-9 was a huge problem in the past. 9 was just an absolute no-win situation with the occasional home run out of nowhere. Now you're looking at a lineup from 1-9 that can compete with anybody in this league. And that's a huge upgrade because when you think about just what it takes, let's just go step by step. All these teams focus on let's make the playoffs first. Easiest way to do that is win your division.
Sure.
When you talk about a division that has a Rangers offense in it, but their starting pitching is in such disarray, you would expect that even if they get healthier by midseason, when they get DeGrom back, when they get Scherzer back, you can open up a sizable lead in the division and you can dominate the division so you guarantee your first spot, box checked, I'm going to the playoffs, I should win the division. That's how you do it. Your offense does what it has to do. Your starting pitching is better than Texas. And Texas is going to struggle trying to defensively hold people down with their pitching, no matter what their offense does. That should be a huge advantage for Houston.
Yeah, certainly while Max Scherzer and, I mean, who knows when Jacob DeGrom's coming
back. And what's Montgomery going to do? We don't know.
Yeah, it depends on where he signs as well. All right, you want to talk mock drafts? We haven't done that in a few days. Texans
free agency. We are making mock drafts great again, no matter how much free agency has consumed us.
Yeah, certainly. So, yeah, let's talk about that on the side. What do you think?
That sounds great. All right, mock draft coming up next. We'll get through that and see what people are projecting and if anything's changed based on what the Texans have already done and what Brian and I think about it based on knowing what the Texans have done because some of these clowns don't even pay attention. But we've got that and a whole lot more. Don't go anywhere. It's more of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at the Decoy in Spring Branch. Here's the Killer Bees, Joel Blank and Brian McDonald.
Live from the Decoy, we love this place. We love broadcasting live from here. You'd love this place if you came out and checked it out, because if you want to play some sand volleyball, cornhole, it's all here for you. But look, it's a great sports bar too. Tons of TVs, massive screens, lots of good beverages. Come on out. It's in Spring Branch area, off of I-10, right close to the mall. Absolutely a fantastic
location. Yeah, Gesner exit if you're coming from downtown and then you turn on Whitty Road. It's pretty easy to get to.
Come out, check us out at the Decoy. Check them out for St. Patrick's Day and next week for the tournament. Absolutely one of our favorite spots. All right, it's time for us to make mock drafts great again. We always do this. We're doing it again today. We're doing it because of the fact that Josh Edwards of CBS Sports decided to put out his latest mock draft. And you know the drill and how we do it. Three quarterbacks go off the board in the top three spots, which we've seen happen quite a bit. Marvin Harrison Jr. at number four is another big get. I see Bo Nix going to the Broncos at 18. J.J. McCarthy in the top five now because that is such a huge win for him.
I'll go ahead and declare it now. If that happens, that's the worst pick in the draft.
Unbelievable.
I do not get at all the J.J. McCarthy hype.
I don't think it's about ability, B-Mac. I think it's more about the fact it's a need.
Desperation.
And suddenly he's going to be the guy to cash in, regardless of what his ability truly shows you. He's going to be a guy that capitalizes.
I don't see how you can watch Michigan play and think, oh, yeah, J.J. McCarthy, fifth overall pick. There's no way you can come to that conclusion.
If you thought that there was a small sample size for Sam Howell, if you thought that there was a small sample size for Drake May, if you thought that Trubisky or Brock Osweiler had small sample sizes, I look at what J.J. McCarthy did, and basically you talk about the game manager label. He managed a ton of games because they had an unbelievable running game. They had more talent than just about anybody in the nation, and they steamrolled you.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't see it. So the draft gets a little interesting after that. Some of the things kind of hold for him. Malik Nabers goes 6 to the Giants in this mock draft. Roma Dunze goes 9 to the Bears. Here's where it gets interesting to me, because we've assumed for a while now, even before the combine, but certainly after the combine, that Byron Murphy would be nowhere near the Texans pick at 23. However, in this mock draft, Josh Edwards of CBS has Byron Murphy going 21 to Miami. I'll go on record with this. If he's there at 20, Texans need to make the call and trade up.
Well, because you know Miami wants to replace Wilkins.
Exactly. So you got. I think if you want Byron Murphy, he's not getting to 23. I think Josh Edwards from CBS is right. Miami would take him at 21. So I would even be willing to trade up, because I'm okay with the compensation it would take to do so, to maybe even go up as high as 18 or 19. But certainly, if Byron Murphy is on the board at number 20, Nick Caserio must make that phone call, make that
trade
happen.
Well, I mentioned that Denver at 18 was looking at Bo Nix. Denver's probably going to be willing to trade down.
Yeah, I think Bo Nix will probably be there at 23.
That's what I'm saying. Because of the fact, you look at the teams, you look at Dallas, you look at Texans, you look at the Eagles, you look at the Rams, look at teams like that. I don't think they're looking quarterback. So I think Denver could take the risk, get the extra pick, because they've given away so many picks over the years in the trade with the Russell Wilson trade and otherwise, that they could gain a pick or two, still get the guy that they want, and the Texans or someone else could slide up. So you're right. It's definitely an interesting slot to look at. But let's do the drill the way we normally do it. We get to 23, and lo and behold, corner Kool-Aid McKinstry from Alabama is there for your Houston Texans. If you see Kool-Aid McKinstry as the pick for the Houston Texans, your thoughts are?
I would be happy with it. I think you can make an argument for a couple other corners, but if Kool-Aid McKinstry is there at 23 and you're telling me that he's the best corner, that's obviously, I would say, the biggest need for the Texans right now. So I would be happy with that pick.
I said it. I want defense in the first round.
Yeah.
We talked about the glaring need. I don't think they've addressed enough as corner because of all the movement on the defensive line that they've done to upgrade. If Kool-Aid McKinstry is their guy, and I like the way Nick evaluates talent because Stingley's turned out, if he's their guy, then so be it. He's the guy that I believe then becomes the other corner to Stingley for the long haul. So I'm good. But the way we do the drill is then we look at for the next three picks after that. You got Jackson Powers Johnson, the offensive lineman from Oregon at Dallas at 24. Kingsley Suamatea, the offensive tackle BYU to Green Bay at 25. And then Graham Barton, offensive tackle, Tampa Bay, takes the Duke lineman right there. If that's my choices, I don't care. Because to me,
you're still going Kool-Aid.
I am going defense. I am going Kool-Aid as opposed to any one of the three other offensive linemen, and I feel like my team got better.
Yeah, I would immediately cross off Graham Barton and Kingsley, the offensive tackle out of BYU. I'm not going to attempt to say the name like you did. You did much better than I would. I would give a little bit of a consideration, though, to offensive guard Jackson Powers Johnson. I certainly, maybe I'm doing that just so Jeremy Branham could be here in spirit, because I think that's been his guy right now. Because
likes Graham Barton a lot, because Graham Barton's gotten crapped on a lot in our votes, in our polls.
I think he's really high, seemingly, on Jackson Powers Johnson. So I'd be fine if Jackson Powers Johnson is the pick and you put him in at left guard. But, yeah, I think I would still stick and stay at 23 and go ahead and take Kool-Aid McKinstry. Because corner, while left guard is a need, I would say corner is the bigger need.
Tell you what, when you look at some of the names you were talking about, but Chop Robinson is the guy we didn't talk about at 27. If he falls to 27, you don't need him anymore.
Yeah, that changes up, because I think, obviously, if we do this exercise a week ago, we're saying, oh, we'll just trade back and take Chop Robinson, or take Chop Robinson at 23. But defensive end cannot be considered right now at 23.
No. So Keon Coleman falls all the way to 32. If you want a receiver before that, Adonai Mitchell, a guy you know very well, goes to Buffalo at 28. Nate Wiggins is another cornerback a lot of teams have looked at in these mock drafts. He's 29 to Detroit. That's a guy that if you don't like Kool-Aid, or you think that size-wise or otherwise you have some concerns, Wiggins is another guy that I think you could put into consideration as a day-one starter at the other corner if that's someone you like, because he would be available in this draft.
Yeah, sir. I certainly think the corner is the pick here. I mean, and then it just comes down to preference about who you like. You want to talk about some bad takes in the next segment?
Bad Take Boulevard coming up next. You guys know we don't like to miss that segment. You don't either, and we've got plenty to get to you as we start the second half of the show. Before we do that, we're going to step away. Halftime right now, the Killer Bees. Thanks for being a part of the Hive, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM.
ESPN 97.5. Time to welcome some new takes.
Right this way.
To Bad Take Boulevard.
If only there was something in your head to control the things you say.
It's the dumbest argument ever.
With the Killer Bees.
Can I just say that I'm an idiot for listening to you?
A lot of people say that to Joe George.
never miss a chance to take a
I'm
shot
not saying
at Joe
I
George.
Say that. I just think
people.
There's a lot of people,
sources,
quote unquote,
sources say.
People that say that about Joe George. And they might not be wrong. But you know how we do Bad Take Boulevard. A lot of clowns out there trying to make a lot of clicks, and in the process look like a, well, you know, less than stellar.
Yeah. Yeah, a clown, exactly.
I don't think that rhymes with clicks, but okay.
No. Yeah, you're right. I'll take the air on that one. So clown number one this week. I know this is a favorite of Pauly G, but Mad Dog Russo on First Take this morning put out his top five challengers of teams that could take out the Kansas City Chiefs. You know, most of the teams on there I'm fine with. The order I have a problem with, but one team in particular is really head-scratching how you can put them over the Houston Texans. So his top five teams that could take out the Kansas City Chiefs and be a challenger to the throne. Number one, the Lions. Number two, the Bills. Three, Ravens. Four, Cleveland Browns. And then five, the 49ers. So Lions, Bills, Ravens, 49ers. I think those teams make sense to be in the conversation.
Now, if I could read your voice inflections and then associate it properly, I would think you have a problem with the Cleveland Browns.
Yes, especially compared to the team that we cover here in Houston, the Houston Texans, who beat the Browns in the playoffs by, what, 30? How are the Cleveland Browns ahead of the Houston Texans on a list of teams that could challenge the Chiefs? That makes no sense to me.
One, I have a problem with the order.
I do too.
Because if you look at it, the Niners are fifth. They beat the Lions. They played them in the Super Bowl. So you would think the Niners should be the top one or two in terms of competition for the Chiefs. But the team that they beat is number one in the Lions. And then, like you said, the Texans beat the Browns. So of the two teams, why would you put the Browns ahead of the Texans? It makes absolutely zero sense to me on that front. I get the Ravens. They had the best record last year. They absolutely boat raced the Niners in the regular season and beat everybody in their path until Lamar Lamar'd in the playoffs with some help.
Yeah, right.
So
right.
He's got a majority of the teams right. You're right about that. I think Philly might have a say-so in the NFC this year with what they've done to kind of reload and restock. But I don't know how Cleveland's on this list.
Yeah, the biggest problems I have with this, Cleveland being on the list and the 49ers being all the way down at five. And specifically to the Bills and the Ravens, I have no problem necessarily with them being on the list, but I would move them down simply for the fact that both the Bills and the Ravens had home games to do exactly what he's ranking them on. They had home games in the playoffs with the chance to dethrone the Chiefs, and they both lost. And they both had multiple chances.
And what the Chiefs were good at a year ago, defense.
Right.
They secured Snead. They secured Jones. They did what they had to do.
Right.
Okay. And then offensively, they let MVS go. They have the ability to upgrade both in the draft.
Rice in year two is going to be even better.
They're going to get a receiver in the draft. They're going to probably still look to get a guy on a cheap, which a lot of guys want to play with Mahomes, obviously. They're not done on offense. And if they get any receivers at all, how do you say that the Chiefs are going to have that rough of a road no matter what?
Yeah, this list was just full of holes. Amita Kimes tore Mad Dog Russo apart for it. But let's move on to our next one. Someone else on ESPN who I guess isn't welcome on
Stevie
First Take.
A loves him, yeah.
Yeah, he's not welcome on First Take. But we have some audio to go along with this, Austin. But Pat McAfee is suggesting that if the NFL schedule goes to an 18th game, that teams might start using load management for quarterbacks?
32 teams in the NFL, you start doing math. A lot of starters got hurt. A lot of starters missed games. As they move to 18 games, which is seemingly inevitable, sounds like it's going to be taking place. Not that we all didn't see that immediately upon 17 games getting okayed. It's like there's going to come a time where you almost just like rest. Like, hey, let's say it's middle of the season. 66 quarterbacks played last year, started last year. 32 teams. That's obviously...
68 in 2022, so it's not like
two math majors.
Like a lot of thing either. Like there's a lot of quarterbacks to start,
and we hit them less. We hit quarterbacks way less than we used to. No.
Yeah, I'm wondering if going forward there'll be games where like even if they're at 75%, it's like let's just give you another week because you got 18 games. You know the NBA has this issue where they were resting players, and that's because I assume the NBA players say our bodies weren't able to make it to the end of the season when the most important games were, which is when all the eyes were on us. NFL guys, you know, like you get to the playoffs, all eyes, there's guys crawling to those games.
Yeah, I mean, I get if you look, certainly a defensive tackle, maybe a running back, an offensive lineman might get low managed, a quarterback.
There's just no way because we've seen what happened when CJ was out, the night and day difference that
team falls apart.
And then you look at the games that they should have won last year. They lost to Carolina. They lost to Atlanta. They lost games when CJ wasn't playing, like at Tennessee, or they won at Tennessee, but they looked terrible.
They lost at home against Cleveland.
Those are the games that you can't afford to lose because those take a toll at the end of the year. Yeah, you're right. I could see them, if a team gets up in a game, they might be willing to sit their quarterback a lot sooner. But load management in terms of quarterbacks missing entire games, I can't see.
Yeah, there's no way you load manage a quarterback. It's just, it makes sense for other positions, but yeah, I mean, not only does it not make sense for the team because you're giving away potentially a game that you could need at the end of the season for playoff seating, but can you imagine the NFL's reaction if the Houston Texans go, CJ Stroud's a little under the weather, we're going to go ahead and load manage this game, and now you don't have CJ Stroud available for Sunday Night Football. They're never going to accept that for the media contract.
That's the biggest thing. Is as much as the NBA hated it when the Spurs rested Parker, Ginobili, and Duncan.
Times 10 for a quarterback.
The most watched sport in America, and you're going to have load management with an NFL game that's a marquee? No way.
So let's hear from another ESPN personality. This one from First Take. He is actually allowed on First Take, unlike Pat McAfee. But Shannon Sharp used an interesting comparison when talking about teams' market on quarterback Russell Wilson.
About this. Can I give it to you like this?
Please.
He's on the market. No matter how fine a chick is, no matter how many Birkin bags or Chanel purses she has, if she's on the market, what does that tell you?
Well, what that might do, she
might can be a dime. She can have a mansion. She can drive a Bugatti with Rolls Royce and Cullinan. If she's on the market, what does that tell you, Stephen
A? That tells me that somebody didn't want her. That don't mean I shouldn't. That's how I answer the question. What are you talking about? Go there it is. I mean, we don't know that. What's good for the goose might not be good for the gander.
Russell Wilson was on the market, Stephen A. What does that tell you? If he was what you believe that he is, that you hoo-hard and you want me to have on pom-pom and doing a whiz, boom, bow, like, yay, go.
Is he a significant upgrade to...
I don't know what the worst part of that is, but there could be other reasons a woman might be single other than, it seems like he's trying to say that Russell Wilson as a quarterback is the equivalent of a crazy woman that no matter how hot she is, you don't want to date her.
Right. And I think to his point, which is why I don't know that it's that bad of a take, Denver didn't want him. after Seattle didn't want him anymore. So it's happened twice. And now Pittsburgh's hanging on, hoping they got a Cougar. I'm not exactly all out on Shay on this one.
I don't know. It felt like a little bit of a reach into a little bit of a misogynistic take. Like,
I'll tell you what this was.
A man could be crazy, too.
Well, this belongs here.
There's other reasons why women might be single other than, oh, well, she's just crazy.
Not since the bad thespianism that used to be the fifth of who said it when you guys used to try and act things out.
Oh.
That was theater because he had to set Stephen A. up and tell him what he had to say at a certain point so that he could say that means that somebody didn't want her.
No, he definitely he was able to invoke the reaction out of Stephen A. that he wanted to get.
I mean, why? Why?
All right, we got we shouldn't go to one more because we got some big Texans news to get to on the other side. We're going
to
have to cut off Bad Take Boulevard.
All right, that does it for Bad Take Boulevard for this week. You know how we do it every Thursday afternoon at 4:30. We've got more, so if you got suggestions, make sure you get them to me because Jeremy says so at Pac-Man Joel, and I'll make sure they get them to the boys. But like I said, Texan stuff to talk about. Lots of interesting new news to talk about. That'll all come up next. It's the Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, 92.5 FM.
ESPN 97.5. I assumed you knew. You're listening to the Killer Bees and some great music presented by RC Ranch,
the official beef jerky of the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo.
Not a worry in a world of cold.
We're back.
Beer in my hand, life is good today.
Hey, we're back on the Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, 92.5 FM. We're at the Decoy. Some loyal listeners popping in to listen to us, and some wiser than others in terms of how close they can get to us so they can hear everything, but others can still do what they need to do and hear Brian and myself. Jeremy got a victory today with the Cougs, which means Jeremy's out tomorrow. Do is it as you wish, if you're happy or not.
Wrong reasons only. Why is Jeremy out tomorrow?
Yeah, there you go. That's a good one. We've never done that before. But we have some big Texans news. Oh, I would say it's fairly big Texans news.
Big time news.
Yeah, coming out of everything that we've already talked about the Texans and hopes for what they're going to do going forward. Big Texans news still to come because of the fact that not only did they trade for a running back, but they're going to make sure he stays their running back.
Yeah, so this is from Adam Schefter. New Texans running back Joe Mixon has now signed a 3-year, $27 million contract extension that includes $13 million guaranteed per source. So my initial reaction, obviously, I'm lower on Joe Mixon than you are.
Yes.
I prefer Devin Singletary. That point aside, that doesn't really matter at this point. But I was okay with it, at least if it was a one-year deal, because Joe Mixon will be 28 when the season starts. He turns 28 in July. 27 is already, in my opinion, kind of the running back cliff anyway, so you're already flirting with the wrong side of the age cliff, even at the age 28 season. Now, I don't think he gets all 3 years, because only $13 million of the 27 is guaranteed. I don't think he gets all 3 years. But my initial reaction, tell me what you think, Joel. I don't really like this deal because this seems to me that Joe Mixon is now here for multiple years, and I was only comfortable with one.
Look, I think that that's the biggest thing. When they made the move, I liked it because it really didn't have to give up much. It was low risk, high reward. There's a guy that, like you said, I was higher on than you, but I like the pass-catching ability. I like the every-down back possibilities instead of what Singletary did was more kind of scat back and doing things outside the tackles and on the edge. I think Mixon's a guy that attacks between the tackles. I think Mixon catches 50 balls a year. I think in Slowick's offense, he's going to be even better. But the one thing that I also thought was, to your point, running backs start to fall off a little bit late in their 20s, getting into their 30s. That's why I was so happy that we could see a kind of a try-it year. And if he balled out, you could lock him up. If he didn't, you can move on. Now you are tied to him for the next couple years, and that's going to be something to keep an eye on because there's always a way to dump out, but you don't like the dead cap money. You don't like the commitment of that kind of money because that's upper echelon running back money if you're not one of the top 3-4 running backs in the league. That's scary.
Yeah, I don't think he sees all 3 years, but if he did, hypothetically, we're now talking about $9 million per year, which would be more than what DeAndre Swift got. It'd be more than what Tony Pollard got, obviously less than Saquon Barkley and a few other running backs in the market. But yeah, for a running back, it's going to be 28 when the season starts. I assume he's also going to be here the season after. So now you're talking about 29 years old.
Yeah.
That is far more time as far as length of contract and money that I'm willing to give for a running back at that age. Hey. I was sort of okay with it, putting aside all the warts that come along with Joe Mixon. I now seeing this deal, I would have to consider myself on the outside of this.
See, I look at it and say, if you get 3 years out of him, the biggest thing is the fall off with me, because what I looked at, I went back and looked at some film and online, some of the clips of Mixon last year. When he hit the hole, he hit it hard. When he was fast, he was really fast. When he was out in the open field, he was doing things. He has the ability, like I said, multifaceted, a weapon for Bobby Sloak to really exploit. But what happens if he plays a full season and takes a beating? What happens if,
especially when you look at this running back depth chart right now, because there's nobody behind him. Like, I mean, I don't think they go into the season with Joe Mixon, Damian Pierce as the running back room. They'll obviously have to add more. But if Damian Pierce is your number two, you're probably going to see what we saw at the end of last year, where Devin Singletary is getting 95% of the carries.
Yeah, I don't think.
And for a running back the age of Joe Mixon, that's a problem.
If it's a 1 year deal like they initially made with the trade, like I said, I'm fine. I have deep concerns about the fact that you're promising $13 million extra for at least the next two after that to a guy that's getting older, that's going to take a beating right now the way it's set up. Now, they do need. If Pierce is your number two, it's a huge miss. You have to find a number two, no matter what you do with Pierce. And I think that that's something that they're going to have to focus on even more now, because they made a commitment they didn't have to make. That's what that bothers me, too.
It does,
This
yeah.
is like when Rafael Stone locked up Jayshon Tate when you right. didn't have to. I don't believe you needed to lock up Joe Mixon.
You know what? And obviously, I don't think we feel the same way about the move I'm going to bring up as we do about Joe Mixon, but it's very similar to what happened last year, where they trade for Shaq Mason, and immediately, boom, Nick Sirianni, extends him with the 3-year deal. I think Shaq Mason, so far that's worked out. We'll see what happens for year two and year three of Shaq Mason as he starts to age. I don't even have to guess what Jeremy would say about this, because I know he hates the long-term deals yeah. for players that are a little bit older. And, yeah, 28 for a running back might as well be 32 or 33 years old for some of these other positions. So, Joe Mixon, yes, I think you're right. Well, like, when you mentioned his explosiveness, like, especially in the screen game, but like, when he actually gets the open space, I think he still does have a top gear. But I would say, like, when you look at some of the advanced numbers for running backs, he was very low on broken tackles. He was very low on yards after contact. So, not beyond breaking tackles, he's not adding more additional yardage, pushing the pile forward. So I think I already have some concern about his efficiency numbers. You tack upon that, his age at 28, and now it's not just the one-year deal, it's the three-year deal. I don't think this is a deal that obviously hurts them super long-term, because it's not, some $100 million contract. It's a running back. But I think this is a deal that could impede them, going forward with some future deals and having having less money to work with.
No, you're right. The big thing to me is the long-term ramifications. I'm not worried about this upcoming season. I'm excited about this upcoming season. Now, someone on text message said that means they're definitely drafting a running back. I don't think there was any doubt.
I hope so.
I don't think there's any doubt for the future, for the big picture, that they were going to look in the fourth, fifth round at a running back. But I think that is probably more of a necessity now as well, because you're going to want a running back's probably on the cheap early on too. So it's interesting to see how it's all going to play out, but at the same time, I don't like this because you didn't have to do it. I like Joe Mixon as an ad. I think he is an upgrade over Singletary. But I don't think that I was looking at it going, well, you got to tack on 3 more years at about 9 a year if you give him everything. I don't like that at all.
All right, so the other piece of Texans news that has come down, came down while we were going through all the bad takes last segment. It seems like the Texans are done now at defensive tackle. They missed out on Arik Armstead, and they have settled for Tim Settle, the defensive tackle out of Buffalo. Yeah, I like that. I like that. Great the pun. 2-year, $7 million contract for Tim Settle, because Arik Armstead, that's the other part of it, the important part of it. Once the Jaguars acquired Arik Armstead, they then agreed to a 3-year, $51 million contract for Arik Armstead. So,
look, I'm not Pat McAfee. That's 17 a year.
Given the numbers,
that's a
here,
lot.
Given the numbers here, are you now more okay with what's happened with Arik Armstead and missing out?
Yeah, I am. I'm still curious as to the whys, why it didn't work out with a trade, why they couldn't have made it. They still could have extended it if they wanted to. It's still not over the top money, though it is a little bit more. But when you think about who they already have on the defensive line, how good they could have been, it was intriguing. But to lock him up for 3 years at that amount of money scares me a little bit. Just
especially
like we were
with
talking
his injury history.
Yeah, just like we were talking about with Mixon, only from the injuries as well. It concerns me. So I'm okay to dodge that bullet because they still have a ton of talent on the defensive line. And then, you know, you mentioned that they didn't have to settle to get settled, but because they also have the Jaguars' defensive tackle, Fulorunso Fatakasi.
Mrs. Foley's little boy.
He is a run stopper, the big F. And if you got the big F on top of that, they're done at defensive tackle. Now, if they go defense in the first round, to me, they're going to a corner.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think this is a clear signal that they're spending, whether it be in the draft or in free agency, they're spending, at least on a major level, is done for the defensive line. I could see them taking depth later in the draft, you know, throw a seventh
round. Like, best player available, if one of the Texas
seventh round pick,
interior
whatever.
Defensive linemen falls into your lap and you go, I can't not take.
But I couldn't
a guy
see it,
that,
obviously, first round. I can't see it second round or third round. I couldn't see them spending a top three round pick on a defensive lineman at this point. And I'm with you. I'm absolutely fine now, I think, with passing on Eric Armstead once we see the numbers, because you got first round, you know, pick investment in Will Anderson Jr., plus, you know, there's a big contract coming up with him down the road. And you spent big in free agency with Danielle Hunter and obviously with D'Amico Autry as well. If you would then put a three-year, $51 million contract in front of Eric Armstead, I mean, defensive line is very important, but to me that's way too much allocated to one position group. I couldn't have signed up for that.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I'm with you on that. Look, I think that they're done on the defensive line. I don't know if this appeases D'Amico or not, but it basically the fact that we talk about Dana Brown talks too much. Well, from a head coach standpoint, D'Amico doesn't talk too much, but when he talks, you better listen, because he kind of gave us the blueprint for what he wanted to do. He feels like Mixon's an upgrade at the running game to start, and what he's done on the defensive line is a huge upgrade over what they had. So listen to when D'Amico talks at the right times. He's not going to give you, like, game plan information, but he gave us everything we needed to know starting the offseason, because it seems like they followed that blueprint.
So if we're right and the Texans are done on the defensive line, I mean, obviously, we love the Danielle Hunter signing. We like the D'Amico Autry signing in Will Anderson Jr.'s Defensive Rookie of the Year. Are we then considered we're good, we're happy with what they've done now? If following D'Amico Ryan's, you know, mission statement, we must improve the defensive front, that's where we must get better, are we satisfied?
No doubt. I am extremely satisfied. Like I said, I think it's a night-and-day upgrade in terms of the entire defensive line. We talked about the injury history of Gernard. He got 19 a year. You're looking at, you know, he got the year.
In 4 years,
he got
too.
4 years.
Right.
So the fact that you added a double-digit sack guy in Autry, then you went and doubled down and got even better in terms of Danielle Hunter, and the fact that you're looking for probably a lot of improvement because the ceiling's so high for Will Anderson Jr. I don't worry about rushing the quarterback. I don't worry about upgrading the defensive line, but I do worry about the fact that D'Amico was doing all this to be better run stoppers, and that's where they're going to have to prove to be better.
Yeah, there is. Look, I said it earlier in the show, and I completely agree with you. There's it's not a red flag to me, but it is something to kind of cast the sideways glance at. The run defense, you know, we'll see what happens, but it could be something that we have to watch over the course of the year, because they've added a lot of talent on the defensive line. They've added pass rushers on the defensive line, but I'm not sure how much better they got against the run. So, next segment, you want to talk about Nico Collins and some of the payday he could expect, or maybe some of the winners and losers across the NFL.
Yeah, we could do both. We could do one or the other, but we'll leave it a surprise to you. But at the end of the day, we're going to get to everything that we can to make sure that you get everything that you need. But before we do that, I want to tell you about my good friends at MyBookie. MyBookie, best in the business at taking care of their customers. They're doing it again. They do it all the time, and they do it all for you because they love taking care of their customers. MyBookie is the one-stop shop for all your sports betting and casino needs, and it's complete with a real-life Vegas experience right from the comfort of your phone. You could be at home, on the couch, hanging out, wherever you might be. As long as you got your phone, you've got access to be in a casino with a live dealer playing casino games. And you know the tournaments are going on now and coming up, the big one next week. Well, what better place to go than mybookie.ag as a website to take your gambling experience to the next level and find betting easier and better because of the fact that you can actually get it all at mybookie.ag. Sign up and take advantage of a generous welcome bonus on your first deposit all the way up to $1,000. Put in $200, Get 300 ready to play instantly using the promo code BET975. And the fun doesn't stop there. You'll get up-to-the-minute odds, props, and this week's expert predictions to help you decide where to put your money and who to bet on. The best part about mybookie.ag, you can bet anything, anytime, anywhere, and it's what I always tell you to do. Just make sure you use our promo code BET975 so you can cash in even more, no matter how you win or lose. Secure your welcome bonus today only at mybookie.ag.
ESPN 97.5.